Hello, welcome to That's My First Pod, the podcast all about King of the Hill. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
Yeah, so you have a conference, like a, what is it, Power Rangers conference coming up soon and all that good stuff?
I like how you call it a conference. It makes it sound more prestige than it
is. I guess it's just built into my lexicon to use the term conference whenever it's something happens at like a hotel or a convention center or something. I don't know why. You're right. Maybe it's more of a convention, but conference. Yeah, you're right. Conference does make it sound better. How's the costume coming along? And it's all the 3D printing and stuff.
Oh man. So I'm so glad that, well, I didn't know I was going to buy a 3D printer at the time. So my friend 3D printed me some of my props, that I needed to make. That's been a hassle. I've made a lot of props before, but I've never made myself a spray paint booth. I kind of just spray paint in the wild. And when I was spray painting, a gust of wind decided to like come out of nowhere and then pick up all the loose debris around, like all the little grass that was loose in the air. Because I live in Texas, it's been really dry, so all my grass is dead. But it picked up all that grass and then threw it on my wet spray paint. And so now I have to start back over. So I'm sanding again. And so that's been a process. I finally got my 3D printer to work. But then it stopped working for me. So I think there needs to be a business where I can hire someone to come, like an expert, to come for like an hour and physically walk me through. I'm more of like a, I guess, a visual learner.
Yeah.
But you can't always find exactly your problem on YouTube. You know, you can find kind of close to it, but you never know exactly. So if someone could come to my house and then like be like, these are the problems, and then this is how we fix it, I would appreciate that. Is that a business already? Like, you hire people to, like, experts to come in person to help you?
In person? I don't know. Probably. I know, like, you could probably find something on, like, you know, Masterclass or what are those sites? Pluralsight, all those little websites where they have people teach you how to do stuff. Feel like you could do that. In terms of having somebody come over, I'm sure if there's like a maker's lab, which there has to be in Austin, there's like no way Austin does not have a maker's lab. I'm sure somebody there could like be convinced to come and teach you for the right price.
Yeah. Oh, I wonder if I know people teach like musical instrument classes on Fiverr.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there's someone on Fiverr, and then maybe I can just like walk with my webcam
over, maybe,
and then they can just kind of guide me through it. I don't know. I'm having problems, guys. My printer's is a Creality 3, or it's an Ender 3 V2 Creality printer. If you know how to do anything, hit me up at Jimsta2 on Instagram. I need help, please. But other than that, I'm really excited. I'm happy to like have a few days off work. That's always a fun thing.
Yep, that is always fun. I mean, unless I guess maybe it's so possible to get vacationed out, but it's at the same time, it's like, I don't know. I can't see anybody who's like, oh man, I have to take time off of work. This stinks. I could see if it was like forced time off, maybe, but otherwise, you know, it's fine. Like the episode where Hank is forced to take off or something like that.
Man, now I'm trying to, oh, that's the episode where he teaches shop.
Yep.
For Bobby. I was thinking about the episode where he injures himself and has to do yoga.
Oh yeah, that one is a good one too, but no, I think
well, that wasn't forced. I guess it was forced.
It wasn't. Like, he realized, at first he wouldn't, I don't even know if we're covering the episode, so I don't want to give away too much. But at first, he didn't want to take the time off. Then he just realized he had no real choice because he was in no shape to work. And he took the time off, but he was not thrilled about it. But I think it was a little bit different than the vacation because he was able-bodied and able to work and stuff. But they just said, oh, we need to take time off because the insurance company wants it. But he didn't want that.
Yes. So, I don't know. I don't know if you remember. It was a while back. Not too far back, but like the Mega Million was $1 billion. Do you remember mm-hmm. hearing about that? And I got into the hype. Well, I got into the hype when it was 600 million. And I've been playing it. I normally don't play lottery. But now I'm just consistently, it's become a routine to go pick up one lottery ticket for the Powerball and the Mega Million. If you were to win the Mega Million or the Powerball, say $60 million jackpot, would you continue working?
That is a very good question. Like, in my mind, I want to say I would because I feel like I would get super bored after a while. Like, yes, with $1 billion, even if you're taking it at the annuity instead of the lump sum, you know, I could still do a lot of traveling, see the world, do whatever I want, have a gym built, all that good stuff, whatever it is that I want to do, and do whatever I want on my time. But I feel like at some point I would like to have some structure to my life. Otherwise, I'd get super bored. So I'd probably work, but I'd also not that I wouldn't work as hard, but I wouldn't be afraid of like any. You would have this new level of freedom knowing that, like, nobody can hurt you because you have so much money on the side. Like, if you did get laid off or whatever, it wouldn't make a big deal.
I definitely feel like I would go to work every day and be like, I don't need to be here. You know, like, just have that attitude, like, you guys better be nice to me today. Like, because if I quit here, I'll be fine. But I do know, if I was to win, when I was a kid, the dream was to own my own comic book store. But comic book stores are, you're either successful or you're failing. But I feel like, I don't know, $60 million broken down. Say, what if I get like $2 million a year for 30 years? I think I could run a failing comic book store for a while. Just to keep me occupied.
That's true. But there's also that idea. What's the word I'm looking for? I guess the idea of if you don't have anything, if you don't have that carrot and the stick in front of you, then maybe you won't try as hard. So, like, you won't try to make the comic book business succeed because you don't need it to succeed because you have a bunch of money to keep you going for the rest of your life. It'd be like if you knew that you had like to make everything work month after month after month, it might instil you to work and try harder and actually make it a good business. But that's just an argument. I don't know if I'd say that that's necessarily true or false, but I could see that. Just I mean, like me, if I said, oh, I've always wanted to own a club or a bar or a video game store or whatnot, and I have $1 billion, so I can just start the company of my dreams, but I don't actually need to because I'm living comfortably for the rest of my life, then I'd probably say, at some point, I'd probably just be like, I don't care about this. And it'd probably be sooner rather than later, like maybe within 5 years instead of 20 or something like that.
True. Maybe I just have a string of failing businesses. Or it's the same building. I don't know if you remember, but like on UT campus, on like the drag, there was always this building that was always a rotating restaurant. Like they were always failing and then a new restaurant was always popping up there. I feel like that would be me. The same building, just new idea each like few months or every couple years, it's a new new venture.
I think the actual term, and it's probably not what's it called, PC by today's standard, but the term I've heard for describing those kind of buildings is Indian burial ground. And it's basically a business that just, like, whatever, in that location, any business that opens there winds up dying within, like, 2 years. And there's a few of those in Austin, like, these, like, little areas that everything that opens there always closes within 2 to 3 years. And I feel like maybe that's, I'm sure the drag has a lot of those.
But yeah, that's probably, I definitely would not work.
Yeah. I think they're probably created a new term for it. And now I just, you know, now I've probably used the wrong one. It should, I mean, admittedly, it should not be called that because that is disrespectful to actual native people and their tribal rituals and whatnot. But you know what I mean? It's essentially this business where, oh, if it, you know, this, I'm trying to think. So, like, I think it's on, it's right by where that Hooters used to be on Austin, which I think that closed down too. But there was a business there on, like, First Street. And I want to say, yeah, I'm not sure what cross street it is, but apparently it never could stay open. Like, whatever opened there always closed within 2 years.
I wonder what's there now.
I think they finally just bulldozed it and either built condos or like a parking lot or something to that effect. But that's what I think happened because I know that they did to the Hooters like 5 years ago. No, not even 5 years ago. Maybe 3 years ago they bulldozed it. And I guess because people weren't going there anymore or something or the lease ran out. I know that's happening a lot. Leases run out and the people can't afford it anymore. So they just call it quits.
Wouldn't it be funny if, like, even the parking garage was a failure, even though people really need parking? They're like, nothing here works.
Mm-hmm. Some businesses, more or less, are doomed to fail. I don't necessarily want to sound grim or whatnot, but, like, the restaurant business is notorious for failing. One, it's almost impossible to make a profit. I think you need at least 3 or 4 years working capital before you see a profit. So you need to have a lot of money saved up or invested or whatever. And then two, I've never worked the restaurant business, but my understanding is running a restaurant will like run you ragged. It is multi hour day. And yeah, I think that's the big problem with, that's a lot of the problems. A lot of these restaurants will open. It's hard just to maintain a business as a restaurant unless you have a gimmick. Sometimes, if you have a gimmick, sometimes that doesn't save you. But having a gimmick can help.
I don't know. What would be my gimmick for my comic book store? We don't sell comic books. It's only novels. It's basically Barnes & Noble. Not a comic book to be inside.
We sell graphic novels, not comic books.
It would be cool to do a comic book shop / bar. I think that would be fun.
You know, I don't think even such a thing exists, like, exclusively. I feel like there are definitely comic book / game stores that sell alcohol, but not like an actual bar. But it also doubles as a comic book. I have seen in the Denver area, I cannot remember what it's called, but my friend and I used to go there all the time when I'd visit. It's a comic book coffee shop. So one part of the store is a comic book store. They also sell board games. And then there's also the part that's just your kind of Starbucks-esque type coffee shop.
Oh, have you ever seen the movie Kick-Ass? I know we're like way off now, but...
Yes, I have.
They have a comic book store that's like comic book store and kind of like a little restaurant, like fast food kind of joint, like a burgers and fries place.
Yep.
And I always thought that was really cool. Like, I wish we had something like that.
Yeah, I think Austin has... maybe I'm mistaken. I thought that Austin had maybe not a restaurant, but at least a comic book coffee shop that opened in the past few years. Maybe I'm thinking of a game store that does that or something.
I know we have like board game bars.
Okay, that's probably what I'm thinking of.
But nothing really like nothing like that. So maybe that's what I need to do. So we just hope I win the lottery, everyone. If I do win the lottery, I will continue doing this podcast. So I promise. I promise that.
Awesome. Well, while we talk about lottery and all that good stuff, we can probably jump into the King of the Hill episode. Really, it has nothing to do with the lottery, though. I guess maybe if they did a comic book karaoke bar, it would have some. It would somehow have something to do with it, but. Anyway, yes. This episode is called Pour Some Sugar on Khan, which is an obvious reference to Pour Some Sugar on Me by Def Leppard. This is season 12, episode 16. So this is like one of the last, I want to say 20, 30 episodes of the season, because season 13 is the final, or last 20, 30 episodes of the show, rather, because season 13 is the final series, or season, rather. This one is a very, well, con-heavy episode, as you can tell by the name. And it gives a really kind of a look into Khan, which I kind of like it because, you know, Khan just seems like a jerk most of the time, but this kind of gives us a reason why he's a jerk. So the episode starts in the alley, and as always, the guys are just kind of standing there, and they're talking about having to go to work, and Hank's not looking forward to it because Joe Jack is on a new diet and keeps asking him how his jeans fit. Khan comes out with his newspaper and coffee, and he's in his bathrobe, and he kind of makes fun of the guys. He's like, hey, I get to telecommute to work and everything. Like, I don't have to go home. I can work from the house. And Khan's like, work and home should be separate, which just, I don't know, thinking about the last 2 years, I wonder what Hank would say about that. But Khan keeps bragging about his great new life. At home, Peggy and Bobby are watching soccer, and Bobby's not really paying attention because the only thing he cares about is when the announcer says, goal! And Peggy brings up that this announcer used to blow up, like, the bounce houses, so he has greater lung capacity, so she bets that he can last for 15 seconds, and Bobby's like, no way! And Peggy says, okay, well, we'll bet for bragging rights, and explains what bragging rights are. And he says goal, but only lasts 7 seconds. And so Bobby wins, and he starts bragging. At Khan's home, Min is cleaning the stove, and looks like she's getting prepared for something. And Khan's just kind of standing over her, telling her how dumb the guy in the IT department is and stuff. And Min's not interested, but she's like, you know, if you're just going to stand here or whatever, you can help me clean. Dad's coming over. And Khan just, you know, gets this deer in the headlights look. And he's like, oh, the general's coming over. I thought he was coming over next week. And apparently he took over the HOA quicker than expected. And Khan's really upset, but he co-signed the loan on the house. So technically, this is his house, too, and so Khan's like, all right. In the alley, the guys are just kind of standing outside of Khan's house, looking at him, just frantically trying to sweep up the outside and everything, and they're like, huh, well, I hear that Min's dad worked for a dictator, and then Dale's like, several dictators, then he worked for Pac Bell, and then he shudders, as if working for Pac Bell is worse than working for a dictator, though, debatable. The general shows up and immediately insults Khan, refers to him as a descendant of fishermen. So yeah, we finally get to see that Khan has his own bully, and it's his father-in-law. And I think it maybe is a joke that goes over some people's head or whatever, but at the beginning of the episode, they're drinking in the alley, and they haven't even gone to work yet. So are they getting buzzed before work? Like, what's going on here?
I think their alcohol tolerance is like so high at this moment. Or I think we discussed how like Alamo beer is like the low level beer. So like basically, I don't know, if you drink a lot, sometimes you're like, that beer is like water. You know, it's like barely giving you any kind of buzz. Maybe it's just like, it's that. Like, Alamo beer isn't that good, like, strong.
Maybe. Or maybe it's just a laughing thing and that's what they do. Because I feel like, maybe the other guys, but Hank just seems like such a guy who wouldn't want to be in an altered state when he goes to... when he goes to work. There's been a few episodes where he's been like prescribed painkillers and stuff, and he's like, whoa, I don't need any of that. I work in a propane shop or whatever. So I feel like he would not want to do that, but you know, maybe he just needs a light buzz before going to work, or maybe he just needs a light buzz before he can deal with Joe Jack. I don't know.
Or maybe he's got a late work day. Maybe he's going in later.
Oh, good point. Maybe he's not going in until noon.
Yeah, and he's like, might as well drink. And, you know, I don't know. Dale, I feel like he's like, I don't care what state I'm in.
Yeah. Bill, on the other hand, he's military, so I don't know what he's getting away with, but okay.
I think Bill's really good, like, just maybe, like, so good at his job. You know, like, I don't know. Whenever I see Bill do hair, it's like, wow, he's really good at this. So maybe he's like, in any state, he's good at it.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that is it. Maybe he, like, no matter how drunk he is, he's fine. I don't know. But yeah, we see Hans, his father-in-law is like a high-ranking general in the Laotian government. So he's a pretty big wig in a curse. We learned here that Khan, you know, is pretty much the opposite. So Min comes from like a family of power, whereas Khan comes from a very meager existence, as the general puts, descendant of fishermen. So it's clear from like the first few minutes we meet him that there is a lot of disdain going on.
Oh, I enjoy like Khan's foil. It's great, like, because even, oh my gosh, what's his name? Ted Wissanasan, is that right?
Yep.
It doesn't seem like Ted Wissanasan is Khan's foil. It's more of like, it's what he aspires to be, or he wants to be. Like, Ted is in the popular group, but Ted could care less about Khan's demise. But while Min's dad seems to be like, it takes pleasure in the downfallings of Khan. So I enjoy that. I like having this new dynamic in the group.
That's true. I think Khan's father-in-law, the general, really just hates Khan because it's kind of that old played out trope, but it makes sense where, you know, one of the in-laws is always like, oh, you could have married so-and-so and been so better off, but you wound up with this loser. Only it's like 10 times worse. Back home, Khan and the general, our general's like, oh, I hear you're good with computers. Put MP3 on my watch. And Khan's like, no, I can't. Drag and drop. It's not even a digital watch. and which it wasn't. It was like a Rolex. Like of course, this is what this episode was in 2008. So I think, even like the Apple Watch and whatnot still weren't a thing. So the idea of having that kind of a smart watch back then was kind of funny. That, you know, kind of very unrealistic expectations from the general. So the general like right to Khan's face while Min and Connie are in the room at dinner is saying to Min, you know, oh, you should have married so-and-so guy. I believe his name was Hu Kong. He was VP of Acquisitions at Ingersoll Rand, and now he's Senior VP of Acquisitions. And you know, how much better off they'd be if Min married this guy. And Connie's like, if Mom married him, I wouldn't exist. And the general's like, are those the lies your father told you? Outside, you can hear the general yelling, and Khan just runs out. And he's like, oh, I forgot the general's red rooster sauce. Do you guys have any? Of course they don't. And so he runs to go to the store, and Hank mentions that, you know, he feels sympathy for Khan, and the guys kind of agree, but then they get over it. They're like, who wants another beer? Khan goes to Little Laos, and he goes to Little Laos, little Laotian market there. And I like how in the background they have Pucky instead of Pocky, if you're paying attention. I guess to make you know that it's a real Asian store. As he checks out, he asks the lady, you know, hey, is there any, is the bar next door any good? And she's like, sure. So he walks in there, and it's a karaoke bar, and Ted Wasanasan's there, and he's performing. And Han's like, oh, I didn't know you like karaoke. And then he's really trying to reach out to Ted, and like in a genuine way, not I want to kiss your butt so that I can get a Nine Rivers. He's like, you know, my father-in-law's in town. Do you ever feel like you're less of a man? Yada, yada, yada. And Ted's like, you know, the nice thing about karaoke is it allows you to express your emotions while keeping an adequate distance. So it's clear that Ted just doesn't care and wants Khan to leave him alone. But also wants him to sing. So Khan goes up and he sings. He sings Marine That Governs the Morning After. And he doesn't do a terrible job. And everybody's actually into it and asks for an encore. And it really, really boosts his ego. I don't know about you, but I am not. I don't know. I'm just not a big karaoke person.
I love karaoke. I love it so much. I'm more of a, I want to be, wait, you're not a karaoke person? Didn't you do live karaoke when you were here?
I did do live karaoke, but in general, like, so live karaoke is its own thing because it allows you to live off your dreams of being a rock star, because instead of singing to like a disc and having the little computer in front of you and you're singing and whatnot, and the music's not quite what it's supposed to be. I don't know if it's because they're trying to skirt copyright laws or whatever. You actually have a live band performing the song behind you. Like, you get to live your rock star dreams that way. So that's different. It's in its own category.
I was really, oh man, I wanted to do it, but I was super nervous because it was like rock songs. Mm-hmm. I think was the theme of that. And there's very few rock songs that I feel very comfortable going out with. I really wish they would have done 80s night or like 80s songs, because I would have definitely been jamming out to that. But I love karaoke. I love performing like with a live audience. I think that's way better. A few of the Comic Cons I've been to, some of the after parties will have karaoke like that. I enjoy that. I know some of my friends like to get the private rooms, you know, where you're only karaokeing with your group of friends.
Mm-hmm.
For me, that's not as much fun. But love karaoke. Do you have a go-to song? Like, Khan has a song. Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
To be honest, I do not. I usually go with something from the 90s, to be honest. But generally speaking, no, I do not.
Mine, and this might surprise people, or might not, or might not be a surprise to anyone. My go-to karaoke song is "Super Bass" by Nicki Minaj.
That does not surprise me at all. You know, it is funny that you bring up the karaoke rooms, because that is kind of the distinct difference between karaoke in the West and karaoke in the East. Because I've spent my time in Asia and whatnot, and yeah, like, they don't do karaoke the way we do, or we don't do karaoke the way they do, however you choose to see it. Whereas we have like a giant room and somebody goes on stage and you're singing in front of your friends and strangers and everything. In Asia, generally speaking, karaoke is you get a private room with your friends and you just kind of sing your head off. So it's usually like you and, I don't know, maybe five of your friends, whoever you can fit in the room. Some of those rooms are decent sized, you can fit a lot of people. And I actually kind of find it interesting because they're in Little Laos, which to me, it reminds me a little bit of Austin. Like, I always joke about how not San Francisco, but Los Angeles has like a legitimate Koreatown. Even Dallas has kind of a legitimate Koreatown. And I always joke about how Austin has Korean Corner, because right there at like Lamar and Justice, where the Hanyang and the Tour de Jour and the Austin karaoke is. It's like we're all these, like, I think except for maybe one business, they're all Korean businesses. So it's like, it was like, when you look at Little Laos, I think you only saw like a strip mall with four stores in it. But hey, there you go, whatever you can get. But also, like, when you go to here in San Francisco and Austin, wherever, it seems like whenever you go to like an Asian karaoke bar, even if it's in the West, it fits that karaoke room style. So I found it interesting that he goes to the bar in Little Laos and it is more of the Western style. Now, granted, I think that works better for the story, but still.
Yeah, I feel like I would go to that bar. That would be my hangout for sure. I would definitely drag you to there.
Yes. I probably would if I was visiting Austin.
If you lived here, we'd probably go there every weekend.
Well, Khan returns home after the karaoke, and he is elated. He's just like on top of the world. And he tells everybody about the karaoke night, and Min and Connie are just super happy, and they're really into it, like, oh, what was it like? Did you use air guitar? Yada yada yada. And the general is, of course, trying to put Khan down by saying, oh, you're not even singing your own songs, you're singing someone else's song. Here is a poem I wrote while I was sitting on trial in The Hague. And he says his poem, which was very grim. It's almost like he was trying to justify war crimes, but putting that aside, when he finishes saying his poem, Connie's just like, okay, whatever. And she's like, so Dad, how was the karaoke? And then Khan was like, oh, we need to respect our elders and listen to the general's poem. But when he's done, I'll tell you all about how I crowd surfed. And the general is clearly upset because he's not bothering Khan, and that is what he wants to do. In the alley, Dale is talking about something. It sounds like he's talking about how he wants to be buried, and he talks about how he needs a casket and a cannon. And then Khan shows up and he gives Hank his mail. And Hank's like, oh, great, the Snap-on catalog. I've been waiting for this for years. And apparently Khan's been getting that letter for him for years, and he's just been throwing it out. So Hank kind of grimaces at him, but at the same time, he's at least happy that Khan finally did the right thing. And it seems like nothing's bothering him since he started karaoke. Khan decides to invite the guys to join him at the karaoke night. They go to the karaoke night, and Hank says he's never seen that many people interested in talking to Khan. The general is like, oh, this is a bunch of losers, so Khan is the king loser. Khan sings without words, which is very, very risky, and he sings with his heart out, does the mic drop, everybody cheers. A co-worker comes up and they say, originally we were coming here to make fun of you, but we liked it. And then he's like, man, it's a shame that they forced you to telecommute. So it sounds like they have him telecommuting, not because it's more convenient for him, but because nobody wants him in the office. But he kind of brushes it off when he hears that. We go back to the Hill House and we see that Hank's happy that Khan's happy and Khan's behaving nice. And Peggy points out that, well, Khan's only happy right now because, he's feeling on top of the world. Deep down, Khan sees himself as a failure. And when he fails again, he will go back to being a jerk. Bobby decides to make a wager on it. And Hank's against it because he's like, he can't bet on a person. But of course, Peggy's like, oh, this is how mother-son bonding looks nowadays. And so they bet. And this time it's for reverse bragging rights. So essentially, you have to say the praises of the winner. The loser has to say the praises of the winner. In the alley, the guys are working on their car. Bill congratulates Khan for another great night. And Khan invites them to Nine Rivers for a fundraiser to mo raise money for the other fundraiser they had. He is the headliner. General is coming, and this time he's not going to wait in the car. The general comes out and is just yelling at Khan and asks Khan to clean his shirt. And Khan just stood him up and said, nope, I'm talking to my friends. And the general just kind of grimaces and walks off. And Hank applauds Khan for standing up to the general and offers some beer. So yeah, Khan looks like he's on top of the world right now.
I like this new Khan. It's a great, he's found a way to channel his energy. That's I don't know. It's great seeing him. I always love when Khan joins the group instead of actually working against us.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked when Khan did that, and I think Peggy really hits on something. And it's what they often say about narcissism. So, like, people who act like they're better than everyone else. A lot of experts believe that people who are narcissistic are actually doing that because they actually think that they are, like, lower than everybody else, or they don't have as much of a value. And so the way they compensate by that is trying to, like, either A, convince everybody how much better they are. So, oh, look, I can afford this, or I can afford that, or I was able to do this, or I'm so smart, or whatever the case might be. Or because they can't bring themselves up, they put everybody else down. And Khan seems to do a little bit of both, truth be told. Yeah, so now Khan feels good about himself, feels on top of the world because he's getting respect from people. And, you know, Peggy brings up a good point. Maybe once that goes away, he will return back to his old ways.
I always forget how much I love the B storyline in this episode as well. The Peggy and Bobby Betts.
Yeah.
I think it's just a fun, subtle thing. But it is interesting that Peggy diagnosed something kind of correctly. So I guess props to Peggy. Peggy is at sometimes really smart and at sometimes very confident. I'll put it that way.
Yep. I think this one she's like spot on with. Khan suffers from low self-esteem. And to be honest, it's easy to see where it comes from because in previous episodes we see it's like Ted Wasana's song. And in some world, Khan believes he should at least be maybe not necessarily as rich and successful as Ted Wasana's song, but definitely more rich and successful than he is right now. And at the same time, you know, he's just, I don't know, it's just, when you meet his father, you realize, or his father-in-law rather, you realize that Khan's just hasn't had an easy time this whole time. Like, they just keep making fun of him, and it's got a erode on you, you know? So I think that's why he's always the way he is. But now he has confidence, and he, like, talks back to the general. We go to Nine Rivers. Everybody's dressed up real nice, too, but I guess that makes sense, because in country clubs, they do not... smile upon people who show up in t-shirts or whatever. They usually like, oh, you need to wear a jacket to come into the dining room or whatever. Dale has like 9 microphones on him, or I'm sorry, he has 4 microphones on him. And he says he's bootlegging the songs because he wants to sell it in Little House, which, okay. The general wants to perform. But the guy's like, oh, we already have a program and a schedule and everything. And Khan's like, oh, no, it's fine. I just won't do an encore. Let him go before me. Yada, yada, yada. Okay, fine. The general goes up, and you can see that he requests a song. And the DJ is like, no. But then the general, like, you know, shakes his fist at him, and the DJ relents. And he is performing Khan's song, which is, like, a no-no in the karaoke world, according to Dale. Yeah, stealing his song is like stealing his wife and then making him listen to it. Everyone cheers the general, and now it's Khan's turn to go on, and his confidence is just shattered, so he just runs out of the room. After the break, we're in the alley. Khan's back to feeling worthless, and Hank just calls the general a jackass, not to his face, but while talking to Khan, he says, oh, the general's a jackass and he won't be here forever. But then Khan's like, yeah, but I'll still be a failure even when he's gone. And Hank suggests, you know, walk it off like an athlete, but who sings? Then you hear the general call out for Khan, and Khan's back to being, you know, very submissive and following the orders. And Bill is like, yeah, this is just like our own VH1 Behind the Music. And Hank thinks, man, we got to do something to help him. Peggy and Bobby, of course, are still betting on Khan. And they're like, oh, there's one more day left in the bet. You know, he's broken now, but he's not a jerk yet. And Peggy's like, there's one more day left. They try to go to the Khan's house and, you know, bring a karaoke machine and get him to sing. But he just won't do it. He goes back inside. And he is just broken and lying down on the floor. Min comes in and asks, you know, hey, come on, get up, it's dinner time. And, you know, he's just decimated. So Min goes and sees the general. And, you know, wants him to talk to Khan, but the general's like, oh no, I'm watching TV. He's watching one of those strongest man things where the guy's like pulling a bus with his teeth by a rope. And he's like, oh, there should be a world's weakest man, because then your husband would win that. And so Min turns off the TV and says, no, you need to talk to him. He's, you know, the father of your only granddaughter. So the general agrees. General goes in to talk to Khan, and I wouldn't call it a pep talk. It's more of a agreement. The general is like, you're a failure. You're a loser. You're a nothing. Everything you do, I'm better in every way. Now, if you can accept that, I will leave and help you save face amongst your friends. And Khan accepts the deal happily, actually. The next day, the general gets ready to leave. And as he leaves, he somewhat compliments Khan. He's like, you have many successes. You've married my wife and have a daughter with her. You have achieved things. And then, of course, Min and Khan go up to hug the general. And Khan wants to shake the hand, but the general just grimaces. He jumps back into the car, drives off. Hank invites Khan to have a beer, and Khan is back to being a jerk. He's like, oh, yeah, I'll go get a beer imported from my cooler downstairs, not the domestic drabble, and starts laughing. And then, of course, we go to the next scene, and Peggy's gloating again and making Bobby talk about how amazing the sandwich she made was, and episode ends. So, yeah. I don't know. I still feel bad for Khan, because he didn't really get acceptance as much as the general allowed him. I don't want to say allowed him to win, but allowed him to save face.
Well, I mean, for Khan, that's a win, right?
Yeah.
Saving face is a win. I think he's like, well, I mean, if you can't have the real thing, he's like, this is, I don't want to say Khan is superficial, but Khan is a little superficial.
Oh, he's absolutely superficial. There's very little depth to his character in the episodes. His big thing is he's trying to climb the social ladder. That is his character.
I mean, you know what? This is a win. I really hope he goes back. I doubt he goes back to perform karaoke anywhere, but I hope he does.
Yeah, he just kind of gives up, which is sad. Like, okay, I get that the general sang your song, but find another song that you can really kick butt at. Like, I'm sure in that book there's another one. And, you know, and it's not like he's bad at his version either. Like, I still thought his version was better comparatively to what the general did. But yeah, what the general saying, like, the general doing that was just dumb. Like, it's clear that he literally lives just to screw with Khan. Like, that is his reason to live nowadays.
Yeah, I wonder, well, nah, I was going to say, I wonder if, do you think it's because Khan married Min? I don't know.
Absolutely, that's 100% it, because, you know, Laos is a communist country and whatnot, and he was a high-ranking official in the country. So for all intents and purposes, his family was really well off. And yet Min went to marry like low-life in the general's mind, but more realistically, like a working-class guy. You know, she rebelled and went to a working-class guy. And I think he thinks like, oh, you know, our family is so great, we should be with other powerful people and stuff. Like, my daughter shouldn't be married to somebody whose family is lower class. And I'm sure, like, his friends back home probably make fun of it too, because, you know, I highly doubt, at least back when he was living in Laos or whatever, I highly doubt that he, like, had a lot of commoner friends. I bet all of his friends were government officials. And so they all probably had daughters who married really rich people. And so now he's like, oh, my daughter, now this makes me look bad now.
Yeah.
That's my theory, and I'm sticking with it.
I think that's a good theory. I don't find any plot holes in it at all.
Yeah, and I think you see that a lot. Like, that's a trope, not just in King of the Hill, but just in a lot of, rom-coms and stuff, where, you know, rich girl and poor poor guy and dad doesn't like him and everything. Like, I think that's that. And I think that's probably where Khan, that actually might just be where Khan gets all of it from. Like, the fact that probably most of his adult life that he's been married to men, he's been getting crap from the general about not being good enough. And so now he really, really, really tries hard to boost his ego by either putting other people down or bragging about what he has. And it's kind of implied that nobody really likes him. Because we all know that Hank and them really just kind of tolerate him. But Hank makes that comment of, oh, I've never seen anybody actually interested in talking to Khan. And then they kind of hint at the fact the reason he worked for home was because nobody really wanted him in the office anymore. So it just sounds like he's not a well-liked person.
It is interesting. I mean, I don't know if we're going to... Are we doing any of his mom episodes? Khan's mom?
I don't know. Just the one, but I think we are doing that one, yeah.
It's interesting. When we do that, you could, like... How... This is how Min's dad is, and then now we meet Khan's mom, and just the, like... Just the way people were raised, it is kind of interesting. Or who raised these people?
Yep, it is. And I don't know. I guess that's why Khan is the way he is. That's my theory. You know, he's it is hinted in one of the earlier episodes that they may have started dating in like their late teenage years. So, you know, that's pretty early in his life. So probably, what, 20 some odd years? He's had this guy just belittling him because of where he came from. And so he's just trying to climb the social ladder. But I think he's also his own worst enemy a lot of times, because it's the show hints at it many, many times that, you know, he rubs people the wrong way all the time. And that's why, that may be why he's held back as much as he is. I feel like if we saw more of the Khan that had the confidence that he had after doing the karaoke or whatnot, he'd probably be much better off in life than he is now. And not necessarily, you know, because he's smart or anything, but because he's just more enjoyable to be around.
Yeah.
People would want to work for him, and he'd probably have a better chance of getting promotions and all that stuff because he was... People enjoyed being around him. I mean, granted, that's not the only reason you get a promotion, but it definitely helps. It's hard to get ahead if nobody likes you.
But then he couldn't work from home anymore.
That's true. Well, he would have eventually if COVID hit Ireland, which it probably would have. I kind of wonder if they're going to put the... if they'll bring that up in the next episode. Or in the remake, like... You know, because if they do a remake and they age him up and everything, and it's like takes place in 2024 or whatever, I wonder if they'll like casually mention the COVID lockdowns or whatever, or if they're in an alternate universe where COVID was never a thing.
I hope it's an alternate universe. I don't like it when the shows reflect COVID in it. I watch a lot of like medical drama shows. And then all of them have done, like, the COVID episode. I'm like, I'm here for fantasy, guys. I don't want to have real life involved.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of episodes. South Park did that, too, the COVID special, which was kind of funny because I like the post-COVID special where COVID's finally over, but it's been, like, 30 years and everybody's an adult now.
Oh, well, when South Park does it, it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe they, you know, we don't have to have an actual COVID episode of King of the Hill because we want to pretend COVID's over at that point. Like, we don't want to live back in the 2020 work from home periods when we're watching a show in 2023, 2024. But at the same time, maybe they just casually mention, like, do you still have any of the, like, you know, maybe Hank is going to work in the garage in his workshop and work on something. And he's like, Peggy, do you still have any of those masks from last year or something like that?
Oh, that'd be that. I hope, I don't know. We'll see. I hope all my, I don't know. I feel like COVID really politicized some things in people.
True.
And I don't want to, like, I don't want to know where all my characters lie, because I have a feeling of where they might go, but I don't want to know.
Well, Dale would absolutely think it was a conspiracy, because everything's a conspiracy to him. But yeah, I think that's all I have. What about you?
I love this episode. Like I said, I love the B plot line. It's really great. Man, definitely a good watch. This is a fun, you know, just kind of sit back and watch episode. You know, when it's, if there's ever a marathon playing, I don't remember there being too many marathons of King of the Hill, though. But whenever they played multiple episodes, this one I wouldn't mind watching. I feel like, though, all of them I wouldn't mind watching.
Awesome. I agree. I love every or just about every episode. I mean, like I said, there's a few that I absolutely hate. When I say few, I mean like probably less than five. There's some that I'm indifferent to, but you know, I'll still watch them when it's on. I'd be like, yeah, it's not my favorite, but it's still a good episode. But yeah, if this comes on, definitely watch it, even though it's a later episode, and we know how I feel about that. Next time, we are going to do the episode Not in My Back Hoe. We're going to go back to the early episodes. Until then, I am Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
Bye.
Bye.